Well, have you decided to ditch the e-tag or the Opal card and work from home for good? Maybe you've got your desk all set up now in the garage, a bit like me, although I do have to come in to be on the radio. With a new ergonomic chair, perhaps, you've got the heater on, you've got a little space for the cat to sit while you talk away on your Zoom calls. Maybe the NBN has finally been working for you. Well, how would you react if the boss called and says, we're going to dock your pay because you've chosen not to return to the office? Does that seem fair to you? Well, that's the reality facing thousands of remote workers as global tech giants move to punish staff for leaving metropolitan areas. I know, right? Facebook, Twitter and LinkedIn have all warned employees who plan to work away from expensive cities like New York and San Francisco that their pay will be slashed. And it's only a matter of time before some companies in Australia follow suit. So what do you make of this new corporate approach to flexible working? Should workers be offered incentives to come back into the office? I mean, the beanbag and the drinks fridge never really cut it in the first place, if you ask me. Maybe you think companies are well within their rights to restructure their wage arrangements, especially given the price of commercial real estate that they're no doubt paying. Maybe your office is worth the commute and you'd never work remotely. What do you think? Love to hear from you this hour, 0418226576, or you can tweet me at rndrive. Jim Stanford is an economist and director at the Centre for Future Work. Welcome to RN Drive, Jim.
Thank you very much.
What do you think of this approach by the big tech firms, Google, Facebook and Twitter, who are warning employees their wages will be cut if they move away from big city areas?
Oh, these employers are just seizing on an opportunity to drive down wages a bit. They have noticed that a lot of people would prefer not to commute. And, you know, it's kind of a law of capitalism. If you see somebody who wants something, try and charge them for it. And so these employers are going to try and squeeze a little bit of money out of their workers by saying, well, yeah, you can work from home. You don't have to commute, but give me back some of the money I was paying you.
I was going to ask you if this is just corporate greed, but I think you've already said that in the sense,
that sums it up.
The law of capitalism. I'm assuming that, you know, working from home is a cheaper alternative in regards to the cost of living for most people. I mean, once we've all factored in the home office setup, we save money on commuting and work lunches and things like that.
Well, you do and you don't, you know, and particularly I think it depends on whether you're imagining this as a permanent setup or just a temporary thing. You know, for a while, you can work at your kitchen table. But I don't know if most people have the desire or really the capacity to do that on an ongoing basis. And if you were to actually set up a proper home office, you know, with a proper workspace, proper lighting, quiet so you can concentrate, the right connections and utilities, that is going to cost you something. So in a way, employers have had it good, I think, that workers have covered those costs. And now some employers are thinking, you know what, maybe I could just shut down the office entirely or convert it to a hot desk type situation and save a bit more money that way. So I think there are some important hidden costs and challenges to working from home that we should factor into the equation here.
For an employee who's been working diligently and reliably for one of these tech firms through the pandemic, for them to now turn around and say, well, you know, you do live in the sticks, we think we might cut your pay. Surely this might amount to a discriminatory practice in terms of suburbanism or, you know, where you live somehow affects the quality of your work.
Well, I think it's obviously unfair. I can see that would, you know, go against the grain of what we would think is kind of moral behavior. It's not really up to your employer where you're going to live. And they're going to try and extract a little bit of extra surplus from you because you live in a place with cheaper housing. I don't know. It's clearly unfair, but I don't think it's illegal in any regard unless the workers get together and have some kind of a union or an enterprise agreement or something to protect them to put these terms in place. As long as the employer is paying at least minimum wage, then, you know, the employer can certainly legally get away with this, if not morally.
I can see one sort of benefit, if you like, for employees if they do have some power to negotiate, because maybe this, in a backhanded way, might also satisfy the skills shortages we've seen in regional areas, certainly in this country. And if you can juggle your city pay packet, if you like, or city job, and also local jobs, you're sort of getting the best of both worlds, really, aren't you?
Well, I don't know. That sounds like you're working two jobs, one in the city and one in the region.
Well, not full-time, yeah. I suppose it's just an illustration of how there are these two ends of the seesaw, and we know that a lot of, with the unemployment rate in this country being so low, a lot of people that have tree-changed and sea-changed, as they say, out of the city aren't fulfilling those skill shortages in the regional areas because they're still on the big city bucks.
Right. Yeah. I think we shouldn't generalize too much on somebody who's got really in-demand skills. You know, there may be a few people who are able to negotiate a deal like that. If you've got a particular attribute that employers are really going to need. But the vast majority of people, you know, they do their job and they've got some kind of qualification. But, you know, it's not like they're in a high-tech seller's market or something like that. So I think for most people, this idea that, you know, technology allows us all to be the masters of our universe and, you know, sell our services to the highest bidder is a bit of a fantasy, frankly. I think for most people, it's still going to be a struggle to find and keep a decent job and try and get a decent wage out of it.
If you've just tuned in, this is RN Drive. I'm Andy Park. Economist Jim Stanford is here. We're talking about the future of work, in particular, some of these big firms who are now threatening to cut workers' pay packets because of them living out of the city and in cheaper areas. I mean, we keep on hearing terms like post-pandemic and post-COVID, but the truth is we're still really in the thick of it when it comes to employment, if you like. Is it any surprise that people want to stay at home?
No, I don't think it's a surprise at all. The numbers are terrible. Australia right now has the highest rate of COVID infection of any industrial country, 50,000 new cases a day on the 7-day rolling average, 50 deaths a day. And yet, you know, somehow we're supposed to say, oh, it's all over and it's time to get back to the office is what we hear from some employers. So it's not a surprise to me that a lot of people would like to keep working from home if they have that possibility. Another bit of data, we've done research that shows a shocking number of people actually had been going to work during the pandemic, despite having potential COVID symptoms. 19% of Australians said they went to work with COVID-like symptoms at some point during the pandemic. So, boy, when I heard that statistic, I thought, yeah, I'm going to stay at home too, because I'm not convinced my colleagues are healthy. And I think a part of the problem here, Andy, too, is the kind of patchwork system we have for sick pay arrangements in Australia. A lot of people don't want to stay home, even if they should, because they're worried about how much it's going to cost them, because they may not have sick pay or they may have exhausted what they're entitled to.
Not that I'm overly inclined to be generous with large multinational corporations as opposed to the workers and their rights within those organisations, but devil's advocate. I mean, a lot of businesses, certainly in capital cities in Australia, have been paying commercial real estate rates and keeping the lights on and keeping the water and heat coming in when no one's actually there. So is this a sort of sign of a readjustment? I hate to say post-pandemic, because I think we've established we're still kind of in that phase where it really is the employer who's readjusting their own costs.
I think there's going to be a lot of back and forth, Andy. I think you're quite right. On both sides, on the employer side, there are some employers who are happy to let people continue to work from home, especially if they can hire them for cheaper, as we discussed. But there are other employers who are going to want people back in the office or the regular workplace under the boss's watchful eye. And there's similarly mixed emotions among workers. A lot would like to stay at home, especially the commuting seems to be something that people just hate. On the other hand, there are a lot of people who don't have a home environment that's very conducive to work. Perhaps they're trying to care for kids, or they don't have space, or they're in an extended family situation. Those are not places where it's great to work from home, and many of them may be glad and itching to get back to a workplace. So The one thing that I've been thinking about as we try to imagine how this gets sorted out is I do wish that there was a process of kind of negotiation and consultation to work these things out. You know, some workers want to come back, some don't. Some employers want you to come back, some don't mind if you keep working from home. I would like to make sure that it was a kind of a mutual discussion and decision rather than the employer saying, you know, this is how it's going to be, which, you know, technically they probably have the legal right to do that as long as it's safe to come back to work, when it's safe to come back to work. But I would like to see more of a mutual process to figure out how that readjustment after the pandemic, whenever we get to that time, happens.
You'd have to say that most of the research into work from home productivity is showing that it is beneficial for workers if it is their choice. Depending on your age, I think it's been established if you're younger, you certainly want to come into the office. If you're older and have children and other responsibilities, that certainly is a reason to stay at home. But I want to ask you, is there such a thing as a workplace that is too flexible?
Well, in general, I think most workers do better in a collective situation in terms of at least occasionally being able to catch up with their colleagues, share ideas, and, you know, receive direction and supervision from their employers. So, you know, something that's I think completely up to each individual to decide where they're going to work, how they're going to work, etc., is probably not conducive to, you know, the best teamwork and the best productivity. So, and I think most employers are cognizant of that, frankly. You know, we often hear about the tech companies, Google and so on, who are, you know, supposedly on the leading edge of this, let everyone work from home. I just want to pick their brains, however they do it best. But I think most employers, I think, have got a preference for keeping everyone together in some kind of a structured, supervised environment.
Jim, always a pleasure. Thanks for your time tonight.
Thank you very much, Andy.
Jim Stanford is an economist and director at the Centre for Future Work. Lots of you texting in tonight. Thank you. 0418 226 576 on this notion of these big tech companies starting to threaten to dock workers' pay now that they've moved to the suburbs or out of those expensive cities in the United States. The threat being, well, maybe it's going to come here too. Belinda in Bellerive, why should workers' pay be docked if they choose to continue to work from home, especially if their productivity is the same or better? Bill texts in from Orange in New South Wales. He says, so if I work for one of these entities and I choose to move to work from the head office, will they considerably increase the coin I am paid? Methinks not. This one too, by choosing to live regionally for years, I've worked for a much lower wage than I would get in the city. It was a choice I made, same as the choice of those who took a higher paid job in the city. Thank you very much for your text this hour, 0418 226 576. You're listening to RN Drive. I'm Andy Park.
ABC RN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.